Hey, this is Emily Vogeltans, and you are listening to the Grove Podcast. Today, we're going to hear from Lisa Tekirst and Shelley Giglio about Lisa's new book, It's Not Supposed to Be This Way. We recently traveled to Charlotte to Lisa's home and sat down with her and some of her family and friends on the day that the book was released and had Lisa talk about her journey through unimaginable heartache and pain and how we can all find unexpected strength when disappointment leaves us shattered. Let's listen in to Lisa and Shelley Giglio.
So it's incredible just to be in your home and to be here, particularly for release day of your book, which is really special to me for a million reasons.
Thank you.
But I think especially because I've gotten to the treasure of being in the midst of. And I love life because it doesn't happen in beautiful tied bows. Mm-hmm. It happens over seasons of time, and it happens in long and hard places. And your life is such a beautiful reflection of that, of God just being faithful to you throughout. And so I want you to talk about that a little bit, but I also want you just to, first of all, talk about the book, talk about the title. Where in the world do you come up with these amazing titles for books? Where in that heart and brain of yours does this stuff lie?
Well, let's talk about the title first, because I did not want this title, so I'll be honest. It was chosen by the public, really. Mm-hmm. And my publisher didn't like the original title that I had pitched the book as, and I'd grown so attached.
Does anybody get to know the original?
Yes. Okay. The original title of the book was Dust.
Ooh, that's kind of good, too.
I know. See, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But, and if you read the message, you know that the reason why I wanted to call it Dust is because I was writing a letter of forgiveness for some of the things that Art and I have walked through. And the counselors wanted me to write what's called an impact letter. So there's two parts to forgiveness. You forgive the facts of what's happened to you, but then you also have to forgive the impact of what that did to you.
Man, yes.
And so there's layers of forgiveness. The first initial act of forgiveness can be done in like the, you know, just like I'm a Christian, I should forgive, that's what I'm supposed to do. And so you walk through the motions hoping the feelings will follow, right?
Right.
And so, but forgiving the impact is more of a daily experience. It's because you don't realize the impact unfolds slowly. And so a lot of people get tripped up thinking, I've forgiven, but so why do I still feel so haunted? It's because there's layers of impact.
Yep.
And those come in waves after the fact. So, and each time you have a new wave of impact that threatens to take you under, there's a whole new set of things that you have to forgive. Mm-hmm. And so I was writing this impact letter, and I wanted to be very, very honest about, you know, the impact that some of Art's choices had had on me. And I said, I would love to be able to say that I'm just broken, where the broken pieces can be picked up, glued back together, and God's light can shine through those broken places, and we'll all sing Kumbaya, and it's just tidy. I said, but that's not my reality. I look around, and this hasn't just caused my life to look like broken pieces. This has shattered me to dust, and you can't glue dust. Mm-hmm. And so the devastation of that feeling was so enormous, and so what felt like a finality to me, like we'll never get back what we once had, and I'll never be the same person that I once was. And so the impact of that was just great. But as I was writing those words, the Lord wouldn't let it just sit in a final place. It wasn't a finality. And the Lord reminded me that in Genesis, the beautiful choice that God made of all things in the world that he could have chosen to make his favorite creation, man, from, he chose dust.
Isn't that amazing?
And God breathed into dust. He had access to everything, and he chose dust. He breathed into dust, and then from that dust came this beautiful creation.
Yep.
And so what I started to realize and what I was able to write in the impact letter was not just a statement of impact, but a statement of forgiveness of the impact so far that I realized. And that is, dust doesn't have to signify an end. It's often what must be present for the new to begin. So I became very attached to this title, Dust, right?
Powerful.
And so I was just like, this is the perfect title. This is what we need to call the book. It rolls off the tongue. It's an easy hashtag. It's memorable. It's punchy. It's creative.
We could still use the hashtag.
I know,
we could just,
right?
Yeah, I think so.
So then my publisher said, we just aren't finding that people are resonating with the title, Dust. Mm. And I was like, what do you mean people aren't resonating with it? Like, it's because they haven't heard the story. If they hear the story, they'll become so emotionally attached, the book can't be called anything else but Dust, right? And so they said, okay, well, let's do a test of the of your social media audience, because they'll be most sentimental, right?
And they're bought into what you believe. So this will be easy, right?
Right. And so we tested several titles, including Dust. And at the last minute, I threw in, it's not supposed to be this way, because we had to have several titles to test.
Yeah.
And the publisher called me and said, well, we have some good news and some bad news about the results of the test. And I was like, well, what's the bad news? And they said, only 4% of people voted for Dust.
You know, 4%. It might just be a little too artsy for most.
And I was like, well, what's the good news? And if that's the bad news, exactly. What's the good news, right? And they said, well, the good news is 54% of people voted for It's Not Supposed to Be This Way, and we've never had any title test that high.
Wow.
And so I was like, okay. So it took me a hot minute because I was already emotionally attached to Dust, but that's where the title came from. And honestly, I do think it's a better title because I hear people say the sentiment, It's Not Supposed to Be This Way. And when writing a book, especially knowing that you're going to have to release the book, I never want to be one of those authors that stands up and just like, buy my book, you know, because it feels, that feels like a slick marketing campaign and not a true message of the heart, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm a big proponent of, we don't want to ask people to buy our book. We don't want to have to beg people to talk about the book. We want our book to enter into conversations people are already having. And because the sentiment, It's Not Supposed to Be This Way, is already part of people's conversations, I feel like the book will slip in and be an answer to some pretty deep, heartfelt angst that people are feeling.
And I agree with that. It feels like you do such a good job of painting something that is so negative. It's not supposed to be this way, is... Everyone feels the strain of that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you talk about it in such a way that we can feel hope in it. And I think your life, just because I've gotten to live close to you in some really hard moments, you are not vulnerable about that. You're always telling of the truth. Mm-hmm. But you do it in such a way that it always feels hopeful. Mm. How do you carry the reality of what you sit in and the hope of what's coming, all in the same phrase, in the same heart, you know, in your mind all the time? How are you feeling those simultaneously?
Well, I don't always feel them simultaneously. You know, sometimes I'm so swallowed up by the hurt of what I'm walking through or what I have walked through that the hope seems like a faraway place I want to get to.
Yeah.
But where, you know, where I have to constantly remind myself is, though I still find myself resisting that this is my story, you know, I still find myself saying, I don't want this to be my story. I don't want this to be the topic of my book. I don't want this to be the message that I'm having to preach right now. I still find myself almost resistant to that hope. Because in order to get, you know, grasp the hope, I have to admit this is my reality.
Right.
And so that can be very painful and very hard. But the beauty for me is knowing that this whole thing that we've walked through, one piece of truth that God has constantly infused in me is that this isn't just about you, Lisa. And, you know, there are some things that I'm going to lead you to and walk you through, but it's not just about you. It really is that there are many other people who would drown in their tears if not seeing the glimmer of hope in your tears.
Yeah.
And so the hope is not this big, beautiful destination. The hope is something you get, you grasp glimpses of, even in the midst of resisting wanting this to be your story. But honestly, I think everybody is living in the angst of a situation that they're desperately trying to find hope in the midst of, but hope is just slight glances every now and then.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to say it.
And I have yet to meet a person. I mean, I bet we could pass the microphone around today, and if we were all just brutally honest, like nakedly honest, I think we would all say that we have situations in our life that are requiring an unreasonable amount of hope.
Yeah.
Like we're having to make the choice to have an unreasonable amount of hope, because if we're real honest, that particular situation feels quite hopeless.
Yeah.
So for me, I guess, though I didn't want this to be my story, and it's not fun for it to be public, the beauty of it being public is then the hope can be seen more easily. And so if I just referred to, I've walked through something painful, you would never see the full glory of the hope of what I'm able to stand in today without knowing the brutality of what we've walked through yesterday.
Yeah, I always think about vulnerability because I feel like, you know, we want to be honest people. We want to be true to what's really happening in our life. And I think it's beautiful because it gives people access to something a lot deeper than just everything's working out and it's all going to be fine. The reality is it's not always all fine all the time.
That's right.
And I think we have to be willing to say that out loud for people to even resonate, to understand, because no one's life is fine. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not the only ones. Everyone feels the same way. But I think through the vulnerability, you kind of have two choices. You can kind of stay with, I'm going to be honest. Or you can say, I'm going to be honest so that you can see something past maybe your situation or circumstance. And I feel like you do such a great job of being vulnerable, but not just for vulnerability's sake. Mm. Not just so that people can see, like, this is hard, but so that they can actually see some redemption in it. Mm. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, Art made an interesting comment to me yesterday because we were preparing. He's actually going to answer some questions tonight as part of.
I love that he'll do that.
Me too.
Yes, it's incredible.
I was like,
it really is.
You sure you want to do this?
Yeah.
I said, well, let me tell you the
first
question that people are going to ask is, what happened? I said, are you prepared for that question? And he's like, yeah, I'd like for that to be the first question. And I'm like, well, I'm like jumping in the deep end here. So here we go.
Yeah.
But he was saying to me something so beautiful. He said, you know, the hardest part of vulnerability and having so many people know our story is that when I walk in the room, I know everyone knows our story.
Yeah.
He said, but the beautiful thing of being able to walk in the room and know that everybody knows our story is, he said, I don't have to wonder who knows.
Yeah.
So there's so much freedom in that.
It's true.
And he said, while it was the hardest reality, it also became a big blessing because I can now walk into a room and assume everyone knows. So instead of trying to figure out how to navigate all these different conversations, I can walk in as a redeemed man of God.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And I just thought, wow, that is really an amazing perspective.
Such a powerful vantage point.
But we also have to remember, you know, that we do, as people, get a choice of our vulnerability, and there's layers of vulnerability, and there's layers of appropriate vulnerability. And one thing I always like to remind people of is there's a big difference between privacy and secrecy.
Yeah.
When deciding if we're going to be vulnerable, you know, it is okay to keep some things private.
Agreed.
It is. Yeah. And with my story, there has been a lot that has been kept private.
Yeah.
So even though the vulnerability comes in the basic knowledge of what we've walked through, those who have walked in the most intimate way with me, you, my friend Colette, a few others, you know intimate details about what we've walked through that no one else will ever know.
Right.
So it's, you know, me keeping some details private doesn't negate my vulnerability.
That's right.
It just, I think, is healthy wisdom.
And it's protecting. I think you do an incredible job of being wise
about that.
And I will say a lot about this at the end because I want people to know from somebody who was up close, who got the vantage point from right next to you, how much respect I have for you.
I literally stood
with my mouth wide open at your solid decision making, your ability to navigate really impossible things with beautiful hope and transparency with the right people. You were willing to do the hard work of redemption of whatever it took for God to restore. I literally would stand in awe of not what so much you did, although you're an amazing person, but what God was doing in you. I think when we let God take control of horrible things in our life, he is about bringing good from it. And you said two things that I want to go back to. One is talk about not going to the valley, but going through the valley. You know, we talk a lot and people quote scripture all the time that says through the valley of death. But not many people, when they come up against a circumstance that's hard, actually can see enough to go through the valley. They just stop, you know, right in the midst of their difficulty or hardship, and it just paralyzes them. And they don't understand that God's actually bringing them through it. So talk about the process and some of the hard stuff you had to go to walk through the valley and not just to it.
Well, there were days where I felt like I was sitting on the edge of the valley, just digging my heels in, saying, I'm not doing this. Yeah. I am not doing this. Because, you know, I like I said, I'm still resistant. You know, there's something in me that I liked being the Bible teacher.
Yeah.
I liked being the woman who'd raised five kids that, although they had messy seasons, they had messy seasons. But I liked being the mom of these kids whose lives were, you know, turning out in a good way. And I liked being the Bible teacher. I liked being the one that people would come to for advice. I like those roles.
Yeah.
I don't like being the broken one.
Yeah.
I don't like being the friend.
If anyone would really like that.
Yeah. I didn't know what to do. So much of my resistance wasn't even so much of, it wasn't me saying, God, I won't walk through this. I'm willing to walk through this, but God, I don't know how. I don't know how to be the broken friend. I don't know how to be the one who I'm so anxious now that when I call, you know, I've called 500 times because I'm so broken that they see my number and think, oh, Lord, please not. I just don't have the emotional energy for her today. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know. No one ever felt that.
But you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, I don't want to be that girl.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't. I don't know how to be
that
girl.
Well, you don't know how to be that person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
And so that's what was so hard. But there, in order to heal from the pain, you have to deal with the pain.
Yes.
So it just became obvious to me that as much as I didn't like this season and I didn't like the new roles that I was having to play and I didn't like who, you know, what this had done to me, the only way to get to the hope on the other side was to walk through the valley. And it was crucial for me to identify friends who I knew were praying more words over me than they were speaking to me or speaking about me. Mm-hmm. And then with those friends, I would have to go stand on their faith when I could not find footing on my own. And so one practical thing I did is I scheduled visits.
Yeah.
I came to your house
Yes, you
and
did.
Scheduled a visit.
Yeah.
And it was just like, hey, Shelly, I'm coming to Atlanta. I'm spending the night at your house.
It was amazing. I loved every minute of it.
I'm going to hang out with you and whoever I'd like to go.
Was just choosing to be around with them. And
I'd like to go to an art gallery. And guess what? I'm also going to make you paint with me.
Yes, it was my first painting adventure.
Shelly picked me up at the airport, and we drove to the arts and crafts store. Shelly's like, I haven't been in here in a while.
I was like, wow, I think I brought my nieces here when they were little.
And then I scheduled visits with, like I said, my friend Colette in Alabama. I scheduled visits with some friends in Nashville. I went to the people who I knew I could stand on their faith. And I forced myself to get outside of the four walls that I called home, which had always been a place of comfort, but now was a source of trauma for me.
Yeah.
And none of that felt good, but it was good and it was necessary. And so, you know, walking through that valley, I had to have other wise people walking beside me. That was crucial. Yeah. Another crucial thing is I had to keep reminding myself it's not always going to be this way. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the pain gets so intense and it stays so long that it feels like it's always going to hurt this bad.
Yeah.
It's always going to feel this desperate. It's never going to feel normal again. I remember having so many conversations where I would tell people, all I want is normal.
Yeah.
And then I woke up with an epiphany one day and it's like, who really lives in this place called normal?
Yeah.
Who
what
really
is that
lives
anyway?
There? You know,
yes.
I'd like to send a text message to that word called normal and ask for it to come and visit and see if I like it as much as I fantasize about liking it, you know, but
my
I don't
mind
know.
It's amazing. Yes.
And so, and then I think also walking through this, the other thing that helped me was opening my eyes at the people around me and reaching out to people on social media who were also going through things, but maybe who were two steps back behind me.
Yeah.
And I love what Andy Stanley says in his principle of do for one what you wish you could do for all.
Yes.
And so during this season, every now and then, God will put somebody who I know is experiencing trauma like what I experience. And here's how I know I'm supposed to reach out to that person. I ask myself, are they potentially alone in their bed at 2 a.m. weeping with no one to call?
Yes.
Then that's one of my people.
Yeah.
And so it's been incredible. There was a shooting in Texas that happened last year, if you guys remember the shooting that happened in the little church
tragic,
in Texas.
Yes.
Well, there was a lady that came to one of my speaking engagements. She was at the church that day. She was holding her infant. Her and her husband had struggled with infertility. She was standing beside her husband. And that day, she not only lost her infant, she lost her husband. She lost seven family members.
I cannot imagine.
And she came to one of my speaking engagements and asked if she could meet me. Well, absolutely,
yes.
100%.
Yeah.
And I wrapped my arms around her, and I was able to say, I understand, you know. Our circumstances are different,
that's right.
But I know what it feels like to lay in bed alone at 2 a.m. and feel like hope is so far away. And I thought, my gosh, this is such a moment of beauty. Like, I will keep walking through this. I will press through the hard side. And I'm okay with being that girl now because she's one of those people who, if not for seeing a glimmer of hope in my tears, she would drown in her own,
right?
There was another young, sweet, precious girl who her husband is a pastor, and he just committed suicide the Sunday after preaching a message on mental illness and giving out the suicide hotline. And her story went viral, and there were lots of people talking about this, and I was able to reach out to her and have a unique immediate connection.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because again, I know what it feels like to lay in bed at 2 a.m. And reach over and your husband's not there. Different circumstances, same heartbreak. And so I think that final thing that's helped me push through is that I don't have to be the broken girl. I can walk through the valley and let this shattering of my life be the connection point that that makes me a vessel of life-saving, life-giving hope to someone else.
Man, it's incredible to watch you. It's incredible to watch you turn what could be your ultimate heartbreak into beauty for somebody else. I just think that's the power of the gospel at work in our lives.
But isn't that our responsibility?
It is our responsibility, but some of us, I think, in the midst of trauma don't feel like we can carry that weight. And what we don't understand is that actually that weight is a gift. And that if we turn all of our difficulty into something of outward looking, I can help you, I can assist you, I can call you to greater, I can understand you, that it actually gives life back into our lives.
That's right.
And it gives us hope in ways that maybe we couldn't actually see. And I say this a lot, but I think people don't realize the power of their own words. And sometimes when you're ministering to somebody else, you're hearing yourself talk about the faithfulness of God. Mm-hmm. And you're telling them that you're hearing you. Mm-hmm. And when you hear yourself, you start to settle into the fact that that's true, not just for their life, but for your own. Mm-hmm. And there's something powerful about just ministering to other people when you're really broken that brings hope to our own lives. And so I love that you understand it, that you invest in it, and that you go for hard, difficult places. You're not looking for all the easy ones. You know, like, whose life is kind of broken, but I can kind of deal with it. Mm-hmm. You're actually looking at people's lives that are shattered, like you said, dust, that don't know how to even start to pick up a piece. And you're saying to them, hey, God is going to bring you through. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I know that is because he's doing it for me.
That's right.
So it's powerful to watch. And I can't, I don't know if we can say officially that you're living plan A, that it's not plan B, C, D, or E, mm-hmm. that it's actually A. And we've talked about it a lot. I think God selects people that he can trust with his glory to do the hardest things on earth. And I think he got picked.
Thank
and
you,
I don't understand it, but I love how you've carried it. So
thank you.
Thank you for the privilege of being your friend. It's a gift to me.
Thank you. And you are a gift to me too.
We hope you've been encouraged by this episode of the Grove Podcast. As a reminder, you're going to want to pick up Lisa's brand new book called It's Not Supposed to Be This Way, and you can get a copy anywhere that books are sold. And if you're a lady who would like to join us for an upcoming Grove gathering, we'd love to have you there. Just visit passioncitychurch.com/thegrove for details on when and where we are meeting. This episode of the Grove Podcast was produced by Jordan Johnson and engineered by John Duke, with executive direction by Kara Diba and myself. If you've enjoyed this podcast, make sure to share it with a friend. And thank you for joining us for the Grove Podcast.